thanks to Linode for their continued sponsorship of Does Not Compute. Linode is an incredibly quick and easy way to deploy and manage SSD servers. Their machines start at just $5 a month for 1 gigabyte of RAM, and high memory plans start at just $60 a month for 16 gigabytes of RAM. In fact, with most Linode plans, you get double the RAM compared to other top VPS hosts. Every Linode box runs on native SSD storage and Intel E5 processors, and is hooked up to a 40 gigabit network. When you spin up a new Linode server, you get your choice of Linux distribution and data center location. Linode has 8 data centers around the world to help you get your data to your users quickly. They also provide add-on tools to help once your new servers are up and running, such as load balancers, automated backups, and system monitoring utilities. Full root access means that setting up your own GitLab instance, VPN, or Docker containers is a breeze, and since all plans are billed hourly with monthly caps, you don't have to worry about budgets spinning out of control. Check out linode.com/doesnotcompute to learn more about how Linode can help you deploy and manage your servers. Use the promo code DOESNOTCOMPUTE2017, all one word, when you sign up, and Linode will give you $20 in account credit, enough for 4 months of a 1 gigabyte server. Learn more about Linode today by visiting linode.com/doesnotcompute.
Guess where I'm going tomorrow, Paul?
Where are you going?
Going on an airplane to Florida.
Yeah. Gonna hang out with the brother?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. For any particular reason or just for fun?
Vacation.
Nice.
Or that's what I'm being told by Jamie. She says it's a vacation. What she means is she doesn't want me to work. That's what she means. And I'm not supposed to be working. But my MacBook is surprisingly small and I can probably just like tape it to my back and no one will even know.
Yeah, I find myself, now that I work from home, I'll be like, okay, I really need to separate myself from this problem for a while. And then I walk away from my desk for like, 2 minutes. I get a drink or something. And then I just go and sit back down at my desk and start working again. I don't even think, it's not like a conscious thing. It's just there. And it's like, well, what am I going to do other than sit at my desk and work?
I sit at my desk and play Elder Scrolls Online with my brother.
Some people have been trying to get me back into that too.
It's gotten a lot better. So I just learned that you can, there's a thing called remote play, and I can play while Jamie's watching TV. I can play on my iMac. I can just stream to my iMac from my PS4. It's kind of cool.
Oh, you're playing on PS4. Got it.
Yeah. But anyhow, yeah, I'm supposed to be going on vacation and looking forward to doing it, but it's also kind of making me stressed out.
Why is that?
Because I know how many issues are currently open in GitHub across various repositories. And it stresses me out. It's stupid, but it does. It just stresses me out.
Yes. Yeah, always with the dread. I get that feeling.
Yeah, I just have that picture stuck in my mind that you sent me. I'll put this in the show notes, but don't let it sink in. It's like the person smiling, but they're just sweating. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. I actually, a couple days ago, I just set up a little IoT device, I guess. IoT, oh man. But I set up a little IoT device for Nest Notes, and basically what I have now is a system where I can send a post request to this URL and it'll actually turn on. Have you ever heard of a sonic bomb alarm clock?
Does not sound pleasant.
No, yeah, it's one of those. I bought a sonic bomb alarm clock, shorted it out so it's always in test mode, and then hooked it up to a smart outlet.
What?
So basically, anytime there's a few people, yourself included, for this show.
I have permission to do this?
Mostly just for fun. Yeah. There's a few people, if you log into Nest Notes in the user menu now, I'll send you a screenshot for this for show notes as well. But instead of just seeing, the normal stuff like settings, log out, all that, you also have a wake Paul button that will turn that alarm on. I also plan to tie this into my reporting systems. I figure, it's only for emergencies and it sounds kind of silly, but like I am a solo developer and I do need to sleep at some point. So having a reliable way to make sure that I am notified if something really does go down.
Right. Yeah, I get it.
Seems pretty critical.
It's one of those things. I mean, you can actually feel like you can get some rest because it's there. You have kind of like a security blanket that allows you to shut your brain off.
Right.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to because you would be thinking about it.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely a thing for me. Like if I'm nervous about something, I'll wake up every half hour.
Yep.
And then I don't get the sleep I need and it's terrible.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I can be the same way a lot of the time as well. That's kind of crazy, though. I would never have thought to build it into the UI for people with permissions to set a bomb alarm off in your house.
Right? Yeah, it's really amazing to me how easily you can do cool stuff like that with making internet things in the real world now.
Are you concerned at all with your Sonic bomb alarm becoming part of a botnet rising up, so to speak?
I assume it's already part of several botnets.
That's ridiculous. Oh, man. Yeah, I never would have. So I have reporting set up. I mean, so I have, like, on all my things now, I think PaperTrail is, like, a must-have. I'm using PaperTrail just because it's the first one that I found. But basically just, like, running logs, like log reporting. And so what's cool is that you can obviously set up reports or notifications from Heroku for things like request failures and memory usage and stuff like that. But with PaperTrail, you can set up reports and notifications for just anything in the logs, you know? So if you can kind of say like, hey, search for this, and then you notify me if there's X many start happening. So that's what I've been doing. If, you know, if people, and this is kind of like not really a DevOps notification. It's more of like a, hey, a user's having a problem notification. Like if there's a lot of rollbacks happening and stuff like that in the logs, I'll have it message me. So that way I know to kind of be on the lookout for intercom because someone's probably going to message with a question. And then I'll know immediately because I can look, you know, I can see why exactly something was rolled back or why a form wasn't saved or something. So that's been pretty helpful.
Yeah, there are so many tools now. It's ridiculously easy to get all of the insight into your application, like what users are doing, what the database is doing, how everything is communicating with each other. And all the alerting and metrics around this stuff is just getting so, so good. I remember even a few years ago, like pretty much the norm was you would have text file logs on a server somewhere and you would have to go look through them. Yeah. And
you can just have something watch it for you for relatively cheap too. You can just have something watch it for you and notify you with specific sections of a log that matches your criteria. That's pretty cool. I mean, I'm not like, this is kind of the first time I've had to do a lot of this stuff. So I'm kind of learning as I go, but you know, thankfully documentation's there, you know, there's, especially with Heroku, you just add a resource and it's going, you know, slap New Relic on it, slap PaperTrail on it, move on, you know, go on your way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just amazing. Solo developers have, I feel like this is the first time it's really feasible to be a solo developer in a lot of ways, just because the tooling is finally, it's so good now. And the tooling, not just on the server side, but on the client side as well. I am consistently blown away with how awesome everything in the Vue ecosystem is.
I've been enjoying it too. What specifically have you been using recently? Because I know we're kind of both working on similar stack applications.
Yeah, yeah. So we were talking a little bit about this yesterday. As you know, and as some listeners might know, I've been working on getting NestNotes moved over to SSR. It's going to be entirely a server-rendered app that is also a single-page application. I want to be, you know, they called it isomorphic. That
right,
was the
I remember
term
that whole
for
thing.
A few months, and now it's SSR.
Isomorphic. There were so many other terms being thrown around, too.
Yeah. So I was using pre-rendering for this. I was using pre-render.io, which I was pretty happy with. I like their setup. They have a simple API for triggering recaches and that sort of thing. Great service, and really good support too, actually. But just for the way NestNotes is structured, I came to realize that pre-rendering was just not really going to be a sustainable solution going forward. There was a lot of stuff where you could change something on the API side and would have to trigger a pre-render recache for client URLs, basically. And there was just a lot of really tight coupling there and a lot of state that had to be maintained between the client, the API, mm-hmm. and the pre-rendering service itself. So it was just something that seemed like it was going to get really fragile and probably not super easy to maintain very quickly, because there is a lot of dynamic data in this particular application. So I was like, okay, you know what? If I don't do this now, it's going to become practically impossible for me to make the switch over. So I just need to do it. So I dove in earlier in the week, and I was trying to just use, I think it's just called Vue Server Renderer, which is like the base way to do SSR stuff in Vue. That's the method that you use, and then you build all the stuff that you want, all the right. magic and whatever you want on top of that, basically. And I messed with that for a few days, and I was having a lot of trouble, honestly. I was able to get it mostly working or partially working, but there would always be some like pretty big hangups. A lot of this stuff is not, I don't want to say not well documented, but like there's not a lot of blog posts, not a lot of tutorials, not a lot of different full setups, like real world setups beyond kind of like a Hello World base plate. And since I was transitioning a relatively complex application into being an SSR application, that kind of made it difficult to do in that way, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
So yeah, I messed with that for a couple days and wasn't having a ton of luck. And then I somehow, I'm not quite sure how it took me so long to stumble across, but I stumbled across Nuxt last night at like 9 p.m. We're recording this at noon the next day. And I already have a mostly working build of an SSR app running on Nuxt.
That's not a lot of time, because I remember you kind of venting a little bit about SSR and getting stuck in different places, and it was just difficult. And I remember seeing on Twitter Nuxt, someone talking about Nuxt not that long ago. So I kind of checked it out, but I didn't really know if I needed something like that, because in my mind, SSR is something that you don't necessarily need unless you have, you know, a pretty complicated application where you need absolute control over unfurling and crawling and all that stuff, right? So I have worked on, for example, Knight, you know, is in production using prerender.io, and I haven't really had much trouble with it. So in my mind, Nuxt was like a pretty heavy tool, like a pretty big undertaking, right? And after looking at it for a little bit and messing with it a little bit earlier, it's not that at all. I was very surprised.
Yeah, it's kind of amazingly well done. I'm really impressed with it so far. There are definitely some rough edges. It is super new. It's not even to official release yet. It's still in the 0.9 range. But it is superbly well done. It's very well thought out. Super well maintained. The docs are pretty great, especially given the early state it's in. I think one of the hardest things that I've run into is Googling, because it's so early stage that every time I Google whatever something something Nuxt, it always searches for something something next instead right now.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I've heard people say that as well about like Phoenix and Elixir and stuff like that. The hardest thing about learning it is finding resources beyond the official guides and docs, which is kind of a bummer, but you know, hopefully it seems like it has a pretty good community around it too, you know, so I imagine that's only going to keep growing, and maybe we'll be able to help contribute to that, because after poking around, so Watch Nature isn't super far along. Right now you can sign in, sign up, you can create posts, you can attach locations to posts and stuff. And I was able to get it mostly working with Nuxt within just a few hours. All I really had to do was change my directory structure a little bit and paste in the new components, and it was working, which was kind of crazy to me.
Yeah. And the conventions that it does have in place are, and this is probably partly a personal thing, but they are very much in line with the way that I like to organize things. For example, you just have a root pages directory, and it actually builds out all your routes just based on the file system there, which is pretty neat. A lot of things about Nuxt really remind me kind of using Rails for the first time, in that there's a way to do this thing, and then you just do the thing that way, whatever that happens to be.
Yeah, I kind of got that feeling too, when just earlier, because I was thinking to myself, like, as long as you read through the docs once, and then you just stick to what the documents say, it will just work.
Yeah, and it's a very well thought out system. It has rules for things, and it has a way to accomplish pretty much whatever you want to accomplish. At least so far, it's pretty good, pretty thorough, but it also accommodates different ways of working, different setups. Like, I'm still using a lot of CoffeeScript in it. It doesn't prevent me from doing that in any way. And you can extend your Webpack config to add additional loaders and all that kind of stuff. All those things that you might want to do are still available, but it's just a really, really nice set of defaults. It's best practices everywhere you look in terms of the SSR stuff and just your ability to quickly and easily extend it in a kind of sustainable way.
So are you running a custom Webpack config alongside of it, or are you just rolling with the nux.config.js file?
So I just have a nux.config.js right now. But in that file, what I'm actually doing is in the object that you export from your nux.config, you can add a build key and then an extend that actually gets called for the client and the server builds.
Okay.
And in there, I'm just adding like a coffee loader and some resolves. That's about it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. That's pretty simple. I mean, I guess Webpack 2's config is not that complicated anymore. It's just a JSON object. So this is just surprising. It looks like a Webpack config file.
Yeah, most of my nux.config, like, geez, about half of it looks like right now, is right. Just configuration for the head tag, like specifying meta tags and all that kind of stuff. It's surprisingly short config, probably around, I don't know, like 40 lines of actual config stuff.
Yeah, it's not much at all. Because I had a couple of Webpack configs files that I've worked on previously have gotten pretty large, and granted I could have split them out, but that just kind of hurts the readability of it in my mind. Because if I work on something and then a month later go back to it, and now everything is spread across a bunch of smaller files, it might be cleaner, but it just takes me longer to ramp up. And then if I don't have lots of time to work on said thing, it just stresses me out thinking about it. So this is not bad at all.
Yeah. So my plan here, and what seems like is going to be pretty feasible, is to have this set up, the next setup for the client, the web client, as well as the server. And eventually what I really want to do with this app, mm-hmm. though, is I will be adding more Webpack configs, because I actually want to do, I'm hoping to be able to do customized builds for like Cordova, for iOS and Android versions of this app, all from this one repo.
That is the dream. I mean, well that's the reason why people talk about like why JavaScript, or partly why JavaScript is so powerful, because it runs on everything. And like you're saying, if you're able to write the code base once, you set up different build chains and then have those compile into the end, you know, Cordova packages or however you decide to release those, that's pretty amazing. Because traditionally, you know, people would have three teams. There'd be the web team, there'd be the iOS team, and there'd be the Android team.
Right. And as a solo developer, obviously, like there's no way I can, it is a big time investment for me to maintain a single page app. By myself. Like that is a lot. While also trying to hopefully build a successful company around it, right? And the idea of adding a separate iOS app and a separate Android app on top of that is obviously just ludicrous. Right. There's no way, there's just not enough hours in the day for anybody. So I'm really excited about hopefully being able to have something where I actually am able to build out pretty decent native apps and just not have that be a big deal. Kind of just have them be a build artifact. I think that's going to be amazing if I can pull it off.
I'd probably steal some of that code. Probably steal some of that code if I'm being honest, you know. That's pretty cool. I mean, so I've been, you know, working in Watch Nature. I've been working on Design Collective, and I think I mentioned a couple of times now that along the side, you know, for an hour a day or so, I'm spending on building out a rewrite of the front end into a Vue app for a few different reasons. And then also, you know, working at night in the Vue land, and it's been really cool to kind of share technology across all of the products that I'm working on, because doing consulting for so long, you just couldn't do that because a Rails project would come in, and then a PHP project would come in, and then a static file project would come in, and then you're back to a Rails app, you know? So it always felt like technology was just shifting around. And so pretty much I'm standardized with the exception of using Elixir on Watch Nature, everything else is just Rails and Vue, and it feels really good.
Yeah, it's not a bad setup at all.
No, not at all. I'm actually really enjoying it. So, you know, talking about this SSR stuff, I have a pretty good idea of, you know, like the buzzword features around it. Like, oh yeah, you know, it makes initial page renders faster because you don't have to wait for all the JavaScript to run and execute. You know, you're getting a server rendered page up front. That's what it's called, you know. And also, you know, being able to have complete control over, you know, how unfurling, specifically like Facebook bot or like Slack bot or whatever, sees your web pages. What do you think are some of the other benefits that you're getting from it?
Well, in my case, the unfurling is for sure the main, like the driving business reason behind it for this transition. But I'm also just pretty excited in general about being able to ship real HTML to the browser, just because, you know, I'm kind of old school. And I think shipping HTML across the wire is just a nice thing. For any number of reasons, just for being able to curl stuff, just because...
Yeah.
Again, the unfurls. The unfurls are so important, man. It's crazy to me how quickly unfurls went from something that didn't really exist to something where it's like, if you paste a link in a chat and it doesn't expand, it feels like something's broken.
Yeah, it really does. And it really does. And especially clients, you know, if they're pasting links to stuff you're working on and there's no unfurl, they're like, why is there no unfurl? Or why isn't this showing up? To them, I mean, because a lot of the people that we work with are marketing people. They're not tech people. They're marketing people. So they're thinking about perception, you know. So Facebook, Twitter, any kind of social media network these days are just kind of pushing the cards, you know, the social cards, Twitter cards, Pinterest cards, Facebook cards, all that stuff. And the marketing people love that because it's like a quick little intro to what they're trying to sell you, you know, because I feel like most people just don't want to click on naked links. You know, they see that, they're like, I don't really know what that does. It could link me to somewhere else. It could redirect me, whatever. But when you share a link and there's a little representation, there's a card there, it feels like you know what you're getting into, if that makes sense, as a user.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, unfurls have kind of made me rethink my whole view on URLs just as a whole. I used to be really, really concerned with pretty URLs, and I am... no longer convinced that they are as useful as, I guess, as useful as they once were, because at one point they were really important. There was a point in time when pretty URLs really did matter because we didn't have unfurls. But now I feel like we've sort of progressed beyond needing them in a lot of ways, just because we are sharing data so much more richly. When you share a URL, it isn't just a URL anymore. And I think that's really cool, honestly, because I still, of course, think that URLs should be cleanly structured, and they should be, you know, RESTful or whatever architecture pattern you want to do for your URLs.
Sure.
That's not really what I'm talking about. But I'm saying things like nice slugs, that sort of stuff. I think there's a lot less reason to do that now. Of course, there still can be SEO benefits and that kind of thing, but for the user part of it, for the actual user experience part of it, I think unfurls are just, they're so great.
Well, they kind of took the place of pretty URLs in my mind, because back when we were all working on WordPress sites and we were configuring the permalink setting over and over again, that's kind of what those were. They were almost kind of like unfurls, because if it was a nice looking URL, you knew what to expect when you clicked on the link.
I'm not sure you did, though. I think we did. I think the people who were making those sites did, but I don't think anybody else really did. Nobody really looks at URLs other than nerds.
That's a good point. Oh, I look at them.
No, me too.
But yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. And for me, it's like a window into where you're going, right? And it makes me feel better about things when I click on the links. It's kind of like a subliminal thing in my mind, you know, but, you know, for the people that we're doing the work for, the people that are marketing, the people that are kind of doing the work that I don't want to do, they rely on that stuff because I think users tend to expect that now, you know, and you're right. Like when there's a link and it doesn't unfurl anything, my first instinct is to think, oh, is pre-rendered down, or did it run out of memory, or what's going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of funny how,
right.
So quickly, too, it seemed like overnight it was just kind of a thing, and it was just kind of an important thing really quickly.
All right. Well, I am super, super excited about Nuxt for a variety of reasons, but I would highly, highly recommend that anybody in the Vue ecosystem go at least take a look at it and kind of start letting that idea sink into your head, because I think it's a pretty solid idea, and I'm really stoked to see where that goes over the next few months. I'm going to be watching it closely for obvious reasons, since I'm integrating it into my job. So I'll probably be talking about it a fair bit here. But yeah, definitely go and look at it. It's superbly well done, and I am already a big fan, which is rare for me to become a fan of something that quickly.
That much is true.
Today's episode of Does Not Compute was brought to you by Linode. Linode makes it simple and fast to spin up SSD servers. Their plans start at only $5 a month for a 1 GB server, and it takes just seconds to spin up new boxes. Head to linode.com/doesnotcompute and sign up with the promo code doesnotcompute2017, all one word. When you do, Linode will give you $20 in account credit. To learn more, go to linode.com/doesnotcompute.